Once it comes on the wall, we'll all stand in honor of the Holy Scriptures. The title is The Unholy Seed, Part 20, Do You Believe? The verse is Exodus 33, verse 16. For wherein shall it be known here that I, referring to Moses, and thy, the God of Israel people, have found grace, and thy, the God of Israel's sight. Is it not that thou, the God of Israel, goest with us, the people of Israel? So shall we, the people of Israel, be separated. I, Moses, and thy people, the people of Israel, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth. You may be seated. How anyone can say that Israel's not to be a separate people is something else. That verse definitely shows it. Well, in the news, Jeffrey Epstein was found dead in his jail cell at 7:30 a.m. in the morning last week, according to the police. He was under suicide watch, which was, of course, a designation placed on him roughly 2 weeks ago to set up the backstory for what just happened. Jeffrey Epstein was murdered for the simple reason that dead men don't talk. And Epstein had a lot to say that would have implicated Bill Clinton and dozens of high-profile global power brokers who happily raped young boys and girls that were provided by Epstein as part of his blackmail-based wealth creation scheme. The Clinton body count is already above 70 dead, who have mysteriously died after possessing potentially damaging information about the Clintons. Think about this for a little bit. From the two teenage boys who were supposedly killed by a train while they were lying down on the tracks in a drug stupor, to the suicide of Epstein, there has been about 70 others murdered in mysterious ways. Found dead in a car, killed in a plane crash, found dead after supposedly jumping off a high building, found dead at home with a shotgun wound, and so forth and so on. What is the body count of Vice President Mike Pence? He don't have any body count. No political company, Bill and Hillary, has left a longer trail of body bags behind them as they carried out an increasingly treasonous series of high crimes against this nation. Hillary Clinton pre-sold her anticipated presidency to the highest bidders on the international stage, collecting hundreds of millions of dollars in the Clinton Family Foundation, which was little more than a funnel for corruption, bribery, and payoffs. Anyone who possessed information that could have exposed the Clintons was mysteriously found dead. In fact, the most dangerous profession in America is working for the Clintons. Jeffrey Epstein, of course, could have testified to the fact that Bill Clinton is a serial rapist and a child abuser whose perverted crimes have been covered up by the complicit left-wing media for decades. Epstein could have been the key to bring down the Democratic deep state traitors whose leaders have long been tied to child trafficking, video blackmail, and satanic child molestation rituals. And just like it happened in 9/11, the cameras in the jail cell where Epstein supposedly committed suicide were not functioning. We shall see what happens in the future. If you believe Epstein was murdered or was swiped out of prison and is still alive, do you believe? Number one, the father of the El Paso shooter oversaw a psychedelic hospital for children that was shut down by the government for rape, abuse of children, abduction, and so forth. Two, the father admits he was associated with people that were trained by John of God, whose real name, I cannot pronounce these names, Genio Teixeira de Fara, born June 24, 1942. He was a Brazilian medium, which is against God's law, and psychic surgeon, which is based in Abaniania, Brazil, when he runs the Casa de Dom Emicida de Laura, a spiritual healing center. He came to fame on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2010. He has a large farm, a ranch, two houses behind closed walls, apartment buildings, motels, real estate, all worth a fortune. He was arrested for sexual abuse and rape, even his own daughter. Could his son, the shooter, be part of MK Ultra? I will remind you of what the late Mark Downey gave to me when we first met. He gave me a book on MK Ultra. He understood this danger, and he wanted me to know about it too. It began during the Cold War when both sides were developing more and more dangerous weapons. The scariest was the development of drugs, poisons, and other means of controlling large groups of people, even the citizens of your own country. Many of the experiments were carried out on unknown citizens and were done in secret. It could have been carried out on us. Don't you think they have used what they found out? This is what the mainstream media will never tell us. The Texas killer was 3 degrees removed from the CIA and its mind control program. This is when Sidney Gottlieb, that wasn't his real name, was living vindication for a conspiracy theorist that there is nothing, however evil, pointless, or even lunatic, that unaccountably intelligent agencies will not get up to the pursuit of their secret wars. He took LSD to the CIA. Oh, my goodness. All right, flip. Sidney Gottlieb, whose real name is Joseph Snyder, August 3rd, 1918 to March 7th, 1999, who was an Ashkenazi Hungarian Jew, was an American chemist and spy master best known for his involvement with the Central Intelligence Agency's 1950s and 1960s assassination attempts and mind control program known as Project MK Ultra. Well, that's during my lifetime, 50s and 60s. Gottlieb, the father of trauma-based mind control programs for the CIA and the deep state, had a long working relationship before he died with one Colin A. Ross, a so-called mental health expert, who later worked at the Timberland Mental Health System with none other than John Brian Crucius, the father of alleged El Paso shooter Patrick Crucius. Look what the Wikipedia says about Sidney Gottlieb, an Ashkenazi Jew. Quote, in 1951, So that's when I was 9 years old. He was age 33. Gottlieb joined the Central Intelligence Agency as a poison expert. He headed the chemical division of the technical service staff. Gottlieb became known as the Black Sorcerer and the Dirty Trickster. He supervised preparations of lethal poisons and drug experiments in mind control. In April 1953, Gottlieb became head of the secret project MKUltra, which was activated on the order of the CIA director, Alan Dulles. Anybody hear of Alan Dulles? In this capacity, he administered LSD and other hallucinogenic drugs to unwitting subjects and financed psychiatric research and development of techniques that would crush the human psyche to the point that it would emit anything. Unquote. His father, Brian Crucius, 63, revealed in a 2014 memoir details of the broken home his son, that's the El Paso shooter, grew up in, confessing to decades of drug and alcohol abuse that led to the breakup of both his first marriage and his 18-year relationship with the alleged shooter's mother. If you believe the El Paso murder was a CIA Ultra subject, do you believe the Dayton shooter? Connor Betts was a far-left extremist who was Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, supporter. It has been revealed that he was an active Satanist attempting to manifest demonic entities on Earth. The warp loner, 24 years old, declares himself a servant of the evil incarnate and rants about everything from schizophrenia to satanic rituals and massacres. The Dayton shooter and his friend. Did you know he had a friend? A communist Negro, Ethan Colley, who would spend days upon days taking illegal drugs. I have the Dayton newspaper, front page, shooter's friend detained in prison. It's a whole article about Ethan Colley, Dayton newspaper. The communist friend admitted that he was the one who bought the weapons that were used in the shooting. He gave them to Betts, the Dayton shooter. During an FBI interview, Colley, the communist Negro, said he bought and stashed the items for Betts at his apartment to help Betts hide them from his parents. Betts even came over to Colley's apartment to assemble the pistol used in the shooting several months before the massacre. Colley told authorities he had known Betts since at least 2014, where they had used marijuana and acid together 4 or 5 times a week. But why is the Jewish media not talking about the Satanism or the communist aid? Why are they not calling for a crackdown on Satanism and communism in the same way they're calling for a crackdown on the right wing? Well, the only explanation I can see is the media is also pro-Satanism and pro-communistic. This is because it's run by Jews, and Jews are the supporters of satanic and communistic ideologies. All modern incarnations of satanic cults are inspired directly from ancient Hebrew mysticism. Anything that fits the Jewish agenda is printed. If it doesn't, it isn't. Do you remember the 2 suspects in a Colorado STEM shooting that left 1 student dead and 8 others wounded? Remember that? Devin Erickson, 18, and a juvenile, Maya McKinley, were arraigned in connection with Tuesday's shooting at the STEM school, a charter school located in suburban Highland Heights, Colorado. Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock said the second shooter, a minor, is a female who is transitioning to be a male. That is not in the Jewish media agenda. So you hear very little about it. In fact, you've probably forgotten about it already. These demons exist. And they can influence the material world through the manipulation of the souls of men. They cannot change physical reality themselves, but they're able to cause humans to do so. What we need to understand and to seriously consider is that we are in a spiritual battle. What we are seeing manifest in the world is absolutely and incontrovably a confrontation between the forces of light, represented by Jesus the Christ and his angels, and the forces of darkness, represented by Lucifer and his demons. If you believe the Dayton murderer was a Satanist, do you believe? It's going to get a little tougher now. The Beatles were an Illuminati creation. Their songs were written for them, and they had handlers who scripted their actions and words. They demonstrated that popular culture is really created by mass mind control. The Beatles were the psychological operation run by the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations, a British corporation that started in the 1950s. This was about the same time that MKUltra was beginning in the United States. MKUltra, Tavistock was used by the Kenite, Canaanite, Edomite, and Ashkenazi international bankers to get as many of the Israelites of the world to follow Baal and not the God of the Bible. The Tavistock Institute coordinated with the Jesuits, Jewish Roman Catholics who were against the Reformation, used the Beatles to popularize social drugs with the youth of America and the Hollywood in crowd. Ed Sullivan was sent to England to become acquainted with the first Tavistock Institute rock group to hit the shores of the United States. Sullivan then returned to the United States to draft a strategy for the electronic media on how to package and sell the group. Without the full cooperation of the electronic media and Ed Sullivan in particular, the Beatles and their music would have died on the vine. Instead, our national life and the character of the United States was forever changed. Anybody see that Ed Sullivan show that came on there? And when you add the fact that the Beatles had their music and lyrics written for them by Theo Adorno of the Jewish Communist Frankfurt School, was concealed from public view. Anybody remember what the Frankfurt School was? Back when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles' catalog of songs, it belonged to the estate of Theodore Adorno, who owned most all their songs and lyrics that he wrote. Adorno also wrote a lot of hits in the British invasion for bands that were very famous and were created by MKUltra and the Tavistock Institution in London. There's a lot in there. But the Beatles weren't the first musical group to perform that emphasized the second and the fourth beat rather than the first and the third beat. There were many, many earlier groups from many countries that performed before they did. The earliest was in India thousands of years ago, followed by many pagan places that included ancient Egypt, Africa, Brazil, Hispaniola Island in the Caribbean, New Orleans in the United States. Eventually, the music evolved from jazz to blues to boogie-woogie to rock and roll, with many variations in between and after. There's been soft, hard, acid, heavy metal, and many other kinds of rock and roll. We now have several additional kinds of black-originated music, which are idolized by many in the white population as well as most of the world. During the last 100 years, the music has changed drastically. But does music change attitudes? Does music affect morality? And does music create patriotism? Can it be used, here's the question, can it be used in mind control of large groups of people? Is there a form of music that causes many people to relax, regain their composure, and even become more intelligent? Is rock a form of music that causes many people to rebel and be immoral? Is rock and roll hooked together with many things that are against the moral standard that the God of the Bible instructed his people? Here are the elements of good music. 1, volume changes, soft to loud, etc. 2, tempo changes. 3, rhythmic changes. 4, the melody is clearly distinguishable. 5, changing harmony. 6, modulation, key changes. 7, variety and development. 8, organization. 9, main emphasis on melody line and its development. 10, rhythmic emphasis on the downbeat. 11, variation in intensity, tension, relaxation, etc. Now let's look at some key aspects of bad music. 1, volume the same. And where is the volume? Usually very loud. Yesterday, walking Bailey through the neighborhood, they had a party going on way on the other side of the pond in the apartments. You could hear it all over our neighborhood. Very, very loud music. If you ever go to a rock concert, it affects your hearing. It's so loud. 10, tempo the same with little or no change. 3, rhythm the same or too many of the same at the same time. 4, melody often lost during the intense beat and or the volume. 5, little harmony, much dissonance. 6, same key throughout. 7, repetition. 8, jumbled, poorly organized. 9, main emphasis on the volume, beat, rhythm, rather than on the melody line. 10, rhythmic emphasis on syncopation. And 11, it's all tension. Well, a form of pagan worship was in time transplanted into Central Africa. The religion became known as voodoo. Participants were moved by rhythmic beats. In the dance done with the voodoo music beat, the belly, shoulders, buttocks, stomach, and breast were all separately or simultaneously rotated, wagged, or otherwise set in motion. The music did something. The music invited the demons to come into the body of listeners. The music invited the demons to come into the bodies of the listeners. The music invited the demons to come into the bodies of the listeners. And if you see the films of the music being played, you could see the demons actually come into them. They did. Question. Does the same music, with the same loud beating of the drums, produce the same effect today? Does rock and roll invite the demons into your body? You know they cast spells when they make a record. Well, through the slave trade, this devil worship music with its incessant beat was carried to the island of Hispaniola in the Caribbean. Here again, it took root. Today, voodoo is still practiced in the island, which has been divided into two parts. One, the western third of the nation of Haiti, and the eastern portion of the Dominican Republic. As the slave trade continued, the rhythm was transported to the United States. New Orleans became a hotbed for the new pounding of drums and the erratic dancing that accompanied it. I've got a couple questions. One, was this the music of another god? Two, did this music differ from Christian music? If you believe the Beatles were set up by the CIA, do you believe? That's going to get a little bit harder. In New Orleans, the music that had come from Africa to Haiti, from India, Egypt, and other pagan lands involved the jazz, blues, and rhythm, and other forms of old music. It eventually evolved to rock and roll. The religion of voodoo originated in Africa. It traveled to Brazil, the Caribbean, and especially to New Orleans and the United States. It followed the slaves. The main establishment of voodoo was in Haiti in the Caribbean. The fate of Haiti is practically unknown in America, as the establishment has censored the study of this epoch from today's high schools and universities and media. Does anyone here know anything about Haiti except it's mainly a black country that has been devastated by earthquakes in recent years and is very, very poor? I didn't. Didn't learn a thing about it in high school. Nothing in university. Nothing in the media. Did you know that Haiti was discovered by Christopher Columbus? The Spanish quickly settled the island, explored its mineral deposits, then moved on to participate in the Mexican and Peruvian discoveries, leaving the island virtually abandoned. It's the island of Hispaniola. Now, where is it? It's in the Caribbean, but there's Cuba. It's the closest island to Cuba. Now there's Haiti on this side, and there's the Dominican Republic. But that wasn't their original names. Columbus landed here, got some deposits out, and went on left. It was basically deserted. No one lived there. He left some troops, but they were finally massacred. No one lived there. Well, who came? Haiti, which was mainly deserted, was settled by the English and French pirates who strove for supremacy. As late as 1657, the English pirates held sway. Conditions changed, and by 1663, the French were dominant. So the western part of the island, known as San Domingo, later Haiti, while the eastern part, under Spanish rule, was known as Santo Domingo, now the Dominican Republic. So you got San Domingo and Santo Domingo. French, Spanish. The French gained control of the western part, now Haiti, and by 1663, while the Spanish had control of the eastern part, Santo Domingo. Question. Elementary school. Who discovered America? Columbus discovered Hispaniola, Haiti and Dominican Republic. He never set his big toe in modern-day America in his four explorations of the New World. Think about that for a minute. The English and French fought over control of Haiti for a period, with the French eventually winning. What happened in Haiti? Before the war between the states, that'd be 1860, the word Haiti was the most powerful propaganda word that could be used. It ushered in grisly visions that brought conversations to a stop and made people agree that no such thing must ever happen again. Question: what should never happen again? The French Revolution, which occurred just a few years after our nation was born, was launched by the Kenite, Canaanite, Edomite, and Ashkenazi international bankers to foreclose and transfer the estates owned by the Catholic Church and the King of France and his nobles to themselves. The Catholic Church owned one-third of the land in France. The king and his nobles owned another third, and the rest were owned by the rest of the nations. How could the banks achieve this? The land in Haiti became agricultural, with the main crops being, one, tobacco, two, cocoa, and three, indigo. This produced self-sufficient farms. Kind of reminds me of our South. They had self-sufficient farms. In the later 1700s, the crops changed to one, coffee, and two, sugar. Well, this required large farms with many slaves. It required a huge investment. Now, who do you think invested in them? The population of Haiti in the late 1700s was whites, free-colored, mulatto slaves, and black African slaves. Whites numbered about 36,000. Free coloreds numbered about 24,000. Mulatto slaves numbered about 14,000. Black African slaves numbered 450,000. Slaves poured into Brazil, they poured into Haiti, they had a lot more slaves than the United States. The year our Constitution went into effect, 1789, the number of sugar plantations alone numbered 800, and there were 3,000 coffee plantations. These marched upon the sides of the mountains almost to the very crest. During harvest, there might be 100 ships anchored. Their produce supplied France and half of Europe. 1,000 ships and 15,000 sailors connected San Domingo, Haiti, with France. The island acreage was committed to the money crops of sugar and coffee and had no space to raid food to feed its blacks. Much had to be imported. The whites lived almost exclusively on imported food. During the Seven Years' War, when the English blockade cut off the food ships, a large number of blacks died from starvation. The king and the dignitaries of the Catholic Church had invested heavily in the commercial activities of the island. Ah. It had been a profitable venture, which supplied much of the cash flow for these large landowners. This cash flow was essential, since it provided payments which kept the Kenite, Canaanite, Edomite, and Ashkenazi international bankers from foreclosing the heavily mortgaged estates. If the income from the trade were stopped, most of the mortgage land would be defaulted. Now, how were the Canaanite, Edomite, and Ashkenazi international bankers going to do this? The French Revolution was the answer. The media helped the war. Oh, the media's been telling false tales for centuries. It lasted several years with yellow fever and the British Army playing a role. But the bottom line was that Haiti killed all its white population. And after that happened, all the production of sugar and coffee in Haiti stopped. And the income needed by the French king, nobles, and Catholic Church could no longer pay their debts. The debts went into default. The French Revolution foreclosed these properties and banished the owners. The reactionary Napoleon was defeated in turn and the land seized away from him. The great prize of two-thirds of France was now firmly in the hands of the Canaanites, Edomite, and Ashkenazi international bankers and was protected by the Allied armies of the world. The French Revolution was a successful business operation. The key was San Domingo, Haiti. The regenticide, the guillotine, the empire, the battles, the mountains of bodies, the massacres were incidental. They were only the footsteps of the stranger to the law, who, concealed behind media, money, politicians, and armies, passed unrecognized and did not suffer a sleepless night. And they are still at work. I was taken from Richard Hoskins' book, The Vigilantes of Christendom. If you believe Haiti was deliberately destroyed of all its white people by the international banks, do you believe? It was August of 1964. MK Ultra had already begun. How do you control the minds of the people that you rule over? Admiral George Stephen Morrison conspired with other government officials that an alleged attack had occurred against the naval fleet that was under his command. It was called the Gulf of Tonkin Incident. It never happened. It was a false flag. It was a lie. As a result of this false flag attack, the Vietnam War was to be escalated in earnest by the United States, and it was for 10 more years. When the truth finally came out, most of the participants were dead. There were mainstream people who were against the war. They were staging protests and putting pressure on stopping this unnecessary war for the United States to be fighting. The movement was growing larger and larger. Were you in that movement? So what did the individuals who were for the war and wanted it to be escalated do? Well, they created the opposition. It's called the hippie movement. In 1965, the hippie flower child movement started in where? And began to protest the Vietnam War. Does anybody know where the hippie movement started? The movement was so antisocial, anti-Christian, anti-moral, that it overpowered the original protesters. Here it is. Who wanted to be against the war if the hippies were against it? And you know, that was exactly the way I felt in the 1960s. They had me in their mind control. They did a job on me. Where did the hippie movement start? Who were some of its leaders? How did they manage to control the minds of their listeners? And when the war ended, they mysteriously disappeared, never to show their faces again. That is, the hippies. When I went to church in Southwest Virginia in the small Calvinistic church next to a coal mine, there was a family that had a single daughter. When she graduated from Dobbins Bennett High School in Kingsport, Tennessee, she was caught up in the hippie movement. She ran off with a boy and they went to different rock concerts. Her father went searching after her. These rock concerts were out in the open. He went to the concerts looking for her. The terrible scenes that he found there were so bad, he couldn't even relate them to me. He just told me that he would find her. You can imagine looking at all those thousands of people looking for your daughter. He found her, take her home where she lived for a few days, and then she would steal some money that was laying around home and sneak off again. The process happened time and time again. When I left that church, the girl was still missing with her boyfriend. They were hippies. The hippie movement started in Laurel Canyon, in the socially isolated community located in Los Angeles. It was to this area that an astounding number of musicians, singers, and songwriters suddenly moved. And you'll know their bands, because we're under mind control. They got us. And most of them were the sons and daughters of the United States military. Can you believe that? In my last sermon, I told you about Jim Morrison, the son of Admiral George Stephen Morrison, the man who participated in the lie about the Tonkin attack to start the Vietnam War. A few months later, his son, Jim Morrison, took up residence in Laurel County with the band The Doors. The Doors were named after the book Aldous Huxley wrote entitled Doors of Deception. Huxley wrote the book about how he felt after he had taken a powerful psychedelic drug. Did you know that the Committee of 300 financed the project through one of their banks, S.C. Warburg, and the drug LSD was carried to America by the philosopher Aldous Huxley? So while the father actively conspired to fabricate an incident that started the Vietnam War, his son moved to Laurel Canyon and positioned himself to be an icon of the peace anti-war crowd. But by the early months of 1965, an astounding number of musicians, singers, and songwriters suddenly moved to the geographically and socially isolated community known as Laurel County in Los Angeles. I'll name a few of them. John Phillips also moved to Laurel County and played a major role in spreading the emerging counterculture across America. He helped organize the Monterey Pop Festival and wrote the popular song San Francisco, which was instrumental in luring the disenfranchised to San Francisco to create the Haight-Ashbury phenomenon in the 1907 Summer of Love. Jim Morrison, the superstar of The Doors, who died mysteriously on July 3, 1971, was deeply involved in the occult. Morrison married his wife at a Wicca wedding, standing in a pentagram and drinking each other's blood. In his eerie poetry, Morrison admitted that Satan was the source of his music. Quote, "I met the spirit of music, an appearance of a devil on the Venice Canal. I saw a Satan or Satar move beside me, a fleshly shadow of my secret mind," unquote. Ellen Naomi Coleman, Ashkenazi Jew, you know her as Cass Elliot, grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, and attended the same high school as Phillips. John Phillips, Michelle Phillips, Denny Daugherty, and Case Elliot formed the band, The Mama and the Papas. She, too, lived in Laurel Canyon. Stephen Stills was a founding member of two of the most acclaimed and beloved bands, Buffalo Springfield and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. He lived in Laurel Canyon. David Crosby was another one who lived in Laurel Canyon. He was a founding member of the Byrds, as well as Crosby, Stills, and Nash. His family tree includes numerous United States senators and congressmen, governors, mayors, Supreme Court justices, members of the Continental Congress, and, of course, high-ranking Masons. Jerry Beckley, Don Beck, and Dewey Brunel were members of the band America. They were also Laurel Canyon residents. Mike Naismith of the Monkees and Corey Wells of Three Dog Night both lived in Laurel Canyon. Frank Zappa, an Ashkenazi Jew, was Laurel Canyon's father figure during the early years of its heyday. There's a picture of Frank Zappa. It says, "The illusion of freedom will continue as long as it's profitable to continue the illusion. At the point where the illusion becomes too expensive to maintain, they will just take down the scenery. They will pull back the curtains. They will move the tables and chairs out of the way, and you will see the brick wall at the back of the theater." Vincent Damon Furrier, who became Alice Cooper, psychedelic rocker, became a superstar. The group moved to Laurel Canyon in Los Angeles and recruited a new member, Neil Smith. They first called themselves the Spiders. They were slammed by the critics as the worst band in L.A. Frank Zappa, however, liked their angry, upfront, and dark music and signed them up. In 1969, they changed their name to Alice Cooper, the name of the witch doctor who spoke to Fernia via an Ouija board, and released Pretty's for You and Easy Action. Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys, bought a home in Laurel County in 1965. Ever hear of Charles Manson? A year before he was arrested for murder, lived for a summer in brother Dennis Wilson's home. Dennis Wilson and the Manson family played music, dropped acid, and engaged in group sex. Diane Linkletter, daughter of Art Linkletter, was murdered in her home in Laurel Canyon, and many, many more. But it wasn't just rock and roll rollers who lived in Laurel Canyon. It was movie stars, too. Marlon Brando, James Dean, Natalie Wood, W.C. Fields, Mary Astor, Errol Flynn, Orson Welles, and Robert Mitchum. The Charles Manson family murders of Sharon Tate, Stephen Parent, J.C. Brigg, Wojtek Frykowski, and Abigail Folger had very close ties to Laurel Canyon. Frykowski and Folger lived there, and Jay Sebring's hair salon was very close to the canyon. Sharon Tate visited friends in Laurel Canyon, such as John Phillips, Cass Elliott, and Abigail Folger. And when the war was over, the hippie movement faded into the past. But the music just kept on evolving. Rock uses stronger and more urgent rhythms than other forms of music, and it is the intensity of rock which sets it apart from other types of music. My conclusion. Regarding this rhythm, careful research was done on African tribes and their voodoo rituals as practiced in South America and Haiti. A complete repertoire of all the sexual rites, incantations, and spells were assembled in order to replicate as closely as possible the successive rhythms that induce listeners to full sexual pleasure. The incessant beat stimulates all the emotional, physical, and psychological powers in a way that wears out the nervous system of the listeners and even paralyzes the mental process of the conscious. Did the MK Ultra researchers discover this? Have they been using this as one of the methods that they control the people who live in the United States? Is this one of the ways that they create mass shooters? If you believe all the above, do you believe Matthew 13:27-30? So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in the field? From whence then has it tares? So the tares must be bad seed. He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. He didn't name the enemy, but an enemy did this. The servant said to him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather you first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. The tares are to be gathered first. So much for the rapture of the church doctrine. The tares are to be burned, while the wheat are to be put in his barn. Two different destinies. One for the tares, the unholy seed, and one for the wheat, the holy seed. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.